Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, you know what it's like, don't you? You take the kids shopping, and before you know it, you are being pestered to buy stuff that they don't need and you can't afford. And you know the tricks too, the lollies and toys positioned at eye level so the kids see them and want them, the alluring packaging, the must-have brand names, the impulse items in the checkout aisle. And maybe you just think this is part of the perils of shopping and you just simply can't change it. Well, one mum who says it can be changed is Tanya Andrusiak. She's the co-author of Adproofing Your Kids. It's kind of a handbook to help parents navigate the murky waters of children's marketing. Tanya, welcome to Open House.
Thank you.
You've got an interesting background. You're a mum, you're a writer, but you've also worked in advertising itself. You've straddled both sides of the fence, so to speak, when it comes to children's marketing.
I have. I never wanted to want to make it clear. I have never, written any copy directed at children. But I was very interested in advertising growing up, and did kind of work my way into a role writing advertising copy for a few years. So I did find that very fascinating, but in the end, wasn't really quite for me. And I guess that fascination with advertising never really went away.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when Naomi Klein's No Logo came out around the practice of branding and the rise of the brand was fascinating to me. And then I had my own children, so I became very aware of the ways that children were being marketed to, but also the increasing tendency by marketers to target them to try and win their brand loyalty from a very, very early age. And what prompted me to pick up my pen, so to speak, was a conversation with a young girl who told me that she felt awful when she would read girls' magazines, and see the fashion and makeup advertising that's aimed at children, mm-hmm. Really as young as six. And she said, how do they think that makes us feel? Aren't children good enough as we are? And I thought, yes, you are, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to have to write something about this.
So yeah. What else have you heard from both kids but also parents when it comes to, navigating the, as we were saying before, the murky waters of children's marketing?
Most of the parents that we spoke to are finding it very hard, quite overwhelmed and bombarded by all the messages that their children are receiving and from a very young age, and not just, keeping up with their children's requests, but also trying to explain it in ways that their children can understand.
Now, obviously, you can't put kids into, a media-free bubble. So just explain what you mean by ad-proofing, and then we'll get to some practical strategies of, walking down the shopping aisle and things like that. But ad-proofing, what do you actually think is possible?
There are limitations, which I'll go into a little bit later on. But in general, when we say ad-proofing, what we're really talking about is understanding children's media environments and limiting the negative aspects of them and trying to find ways to enhance the positive, because there's a lot on both sides. So, like you said, you can't put a child in a bubble. There's no such thing as, making a child ad-proof, because we're all susceptible. But there are certainly strategies that we can use to kind of minimise the really annoying and kind of more damaging effects of of advertising.
Okay. Tanya Andrusiak, the author of Adproofing Your Kids, is with us on Open House. All right, get your pens out. Going to look at some particular strategies that you might well have faced and get some ideas from Tanya on what you can actually do. Now, Tanya, one of those areas in the book that you actually cover is the supermarket aisle.
Mm-hmm.
How many parents can actually say, oh, yeah, you walk down the supermarket aisle and all the things that actually happen there, the tantrums and the give me this and I really, really want that and I need one of those, Mum, I need one of those.
Yes.
So let's talk about some strategies. What can parents do when they're walking down the supermarket aisle and start to encounter some of these things?
Yeah, well, I'm going to start a little bit before we're walking down the supermarket
uh-huh.
aisle. There are a few things that we can do before we leave that can go a long way towards minimising the tantrums. One is make sure they've had something to eat. So they're not hungry when they're walking through, when they're going through the supermarket with you.
Mm-hmm.
Pack a little lunchbox, throw in some carrot sticks and, sultanas and a bottle of water so that you have something there that you can feed them with if they do get a bit snackish while you're going through. Also choosing your time, making sure that you, as much as possible, you know, sometimes you can't plan these things, but as much as possible, choosing a time when your children are rested, not when they're due for their nap, and be prepared. Let them know what you expect. You know, I don't expect that we're going to have tantrums there. You know, you can ask for something once, but pestering is just not on. And with Pester Power, you know, really making sure that they know that pestering won't get them what they want. And trust me, it's really worth a couple of tantrums to you know, push through and make sure they get the message about that. But then beyond that, engaging children with what you're doing in the supermarket is a really big way of quelling the Pester Power. So, you know, with younger children, you know, playing I Spy, simple things like that as you're walking around, or word games, rhyming, getting them to find small words that they can recognise and read to you, or hold something in the trolley, or check for broken eggs, or even point out the closed circuit TV cameras.
Distract them and get them to look somewhere else.
Get them to and engage them with what you're doing. Talk to them about what you're putting in the trolley. Get them to hold, you know, the lemons, or sniff the rock melon, or, you know, they're rich kind of sensory environments too, particularly in the you know, in the greengrocer section. But with older kids, you know, they can keep track of the budget with their, you know, with your mobile phone calculator. You can talk about advertising claims. You can talk about value, which products are good value and which ones aren't so much. You know, checking for freshness and, you know, spotting the silliest advertising claim. Nearly
that's
all
brilliant.
Things that we can do to, you
that's
know.
Clever. That's really good, Tanya. Very, very good. The other thing that you talk about is the kind of conversations you can actually have with kids and teenagers when it comes to reading the advertisements, whether it be in magazines or reading them when you actually see them on the television. Walk us through some tactics there.
Sure. Look, you know, media literacy, which is what we're really talking about when we're talking about engaging children in conversations about ads or any media message for that matter. You know, simple questions every time you see a message that you want to talk about, you know, who created this message? It's really important that children understand that they don't just kind of pop up. You know, there's a lot of time and effort, as you know yourself, that go into creating media messages. So helping them to understand, you know, the different roles and the different processes in creating a media message. So who created it? What does this media message want from me? You know, what does it want me to do? How was it created? You know, what were the processes? How did they make it? Help them understand that all media messages have a point of view. And trying to pick out what that point of view is. And really importantly is how does it make me feel? You know, ads are designed to elicit a response from us, and often an emotional response. So that's a big part of decoding what it wants us to do and to kind of take a step back from it. And last of all, why am I seeing it here? You know, why is this ad in a bus shelter? Well, because, you know, when you're waiting for a bus, you're stuck. You can't, you know, there's not many other places to look. Or why is it on during this program? Who do they think watches this program? So, you know, getting kids into the habit of asking lots of questions, you know, and sometimes they'll just say, you know what, can't we just watch television? You know, it's just an ad. And it's okay to say, you know, yes, it is just an ad, but you know what? It's my job to help you learn about these things, and you know. But for now, I'll just be quiet.
That raises a really good question. You know, to what degree have you and your co-author found evidence that there is actually a manipulation happening by marketers when it comes to children and the advertising that they're producing to try and reach them?
Oh, that's a very, very tricky question. It's probably more for insiders than me. I do know that that certainly marketers are very open about using more sophisticated technologies to help gauge you know, how to best target people. You know, things like using fMRI, so brain scanning, to see how our brains respond to marketing. Some advertising agencies, some large ones, employ child psychologists. And employ developmental psychology to understand the best ways to target children at different stages of development.
Yeah.
So you know, this is all you could say that that's just part of the industry, and that's part of how this is done. Or you could say, well, that's manipulative, and I guess it depends on your viewpoint. as to, you know, to how you would see that.
Yeah, I'd like to get people's response to that. 1-300-40-20-20. What do you think about advertising directed to kids? On the one hand, you could actually say, well, if it's a toy and it might be nice, well, maybe that's okay. On the other hand, it certainly seems that when it comes to body image, which we'll talk about in just a second, there's some major ramifications. 1-300-40-20-20. This is Open House. Tanya Andrusiak is the co-author of Adproofing Your Kids. Let's talk about body image then, because again, you've covered this in the book, that more and more this is being proven to be a major negative ramification of a lot of children's advertising.
Yes, that's right. There are quite a few studies now emerging showing the extent to which media messages influence children's body image. You know, one 2006 Flinders University research paper indicated that girls who watched music videos and read appearance-focused magazines were more aware of dieting. You know, girls who read magazines that are aimed at women are more likely to be dissatisfied with their appearance. Advertising, you know, in order to work, it often makes us, or it intends to make us feel like we're lacking in some way, and kids are no different. And what we're finding with body image is that children are finding their bodies an increasing source of anxiety rather than joy. Certainly, I think a Mission Australia survey that was last year or the year before indicated that body image was the number one concern of young people in Australia.
I remember that, yeah.
Which is quite concerning and astounding, really, given that we have something like, you know, issues like climate change confronting our children. So, you know, for them to be saying, you know, body image is the top of my list, you know, my feelings about how I look, it's big.
And so when it comes to parents, you know, combating that, because folks listening will actually say, well, I can already see that in my daughter or even my son. What kind of things can they do? Is it all about being media literate again and teaching them those kinds of skills of reading the messages and who's promoting them and why they want a particularly skinny girl on the front of that cover?
Yeah, it's certainly part of it. But, you know, we also need to be really aware that there's a limit to what we can expect our children to be able to process and understand about them. And because it's such an emotional kind of personal sensitive issue too, there are things that we can do, but I am aware that children, even when children are older children, are aware of how these messages are constructed. In other words, they have a high degree of media literacy and they are aware that very thin models are used, and they're aware of the techniques that are used to create this image. It still does not stop them from wanting to look like that, mm-hmm. even when they're aware that it's unhealthy. So there is a limit as much as possible, and it's not always possible, but as much as possible we need to really try and limit those kinds of messages reaching our kids.
Okay.
You know, model our own healthy body image. Keep asking questions. You know, do real women look like that? Do we know anyone that looks like that? And letting kids know that how they look is a very, very small part of who they are, and focusing instead on their gifts and talents, you know, are all things that we can do to help our children with their body image.
Good advice. All right. The last one I want to just raise with you, there's many more that you've covered in the book, but just the last one for us tonight, brand names, that pressure to actually have a certain brand name to fit in with the group. How can parents navigate that with their kids when the pressure really can be just so intense?
Yeah, look, brands are often, well, most often, the most successful brand campaigns are really not about a pair of shoes or, you know, or a ball or, you know, sporting gear. They're about fundamental things, you know, fundamental human needs of ours, you know, the need to belong, you know, the need for autonomy, the need to connect with other people and, as you say, you know, fitting in. So these are really hard things to counter, and I don't think there's any kind of, magic solution to it. Media literacy, again, encourages children to think about these messages, but then to also understand and cut them a bit of slack and understand that that is really, really important to them at that time. And some parents would talk to us about, talking with their kids and striking a deal and saying, okay, well, I'll pay for the cost of the generic item, you know. So if a generic pair of jeans are $35 and you want the branded pair that's $100, you know, I'm willing to pay the $35, but maybe you can pay the balance.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, some parents said to us it was a good exercise for the kids because it might have taken a few times, but eventually they realised that it wasn't that great value. You know, they could get three pairs of jeans instead of one.
Yeah.
we need to remember as parents that under around about the age of 8, children don't necessarily understand the persuasive intent of advertisers, which means that they don't understand, you know, when we start watching an ad, immediately we're on guard. Mm. It doesn't happen that way with children. They don't understand that the intent of the advertiser from the very start is to persuade them to do or want or buy or prefer a particular brand of product. We need to build that into our conversations and be aware that there are limits on what we can expect our children to understand.
Yes, well, that actually leads to the statement that you and your co-author make in the book, and you say actually, quote, "Our research has brought us to a simple conclusion, advertising directed at children is wrong."
Mm. You know, children don't have the cognitive capacity that adults have to understand advertising. I believe very strongly that if we're going to be advertised to, we have the right to know that we're being advertised to. And if children don't have that that capacity, then they really shouldn't be put in that position in the first place.
Yes. And do you think it's realistic then that there could be a ban on advertising? Do you think it could actually go that far?
Look, other countries have experimented with bans in different forms. I wouldn't like to speculate how it might turn out in Australia, seeing as the moves so far seem to be a hesitation to regulate the media. So I would like to think it would be realistic.
Yeah.
I'm really not sure.
Yeah, okay. Well, you've got the conversation continuing as a result of the book and some of the things that you've come to personally. Thanks, Tanya. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, Tanya Andrzejak, author of Ad-Proofing Your Kids through Finch Publishing.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.